Transformation of America by Mark Phillips and Kathy O'Brien. Chapter 7, Charm School. After Aquino instilled my base sex programming, I was often taken by Houston to Youngstown, Ohio to attend the sex slave training camp hellhole referred to as Charm School. Houston often performed in the Youngstown area at county fairs, Fraternal Order of Police shows, or any little country music entertainment gigs that would bring us in the proximity of the dreaded Charm School. On occasion, Kelly would go through the torture process with me. But usually Houston delivered me to the door for training with other CIA and mafia slaves my age, and then left taking Kelly with him. When Charm School was in session, there were several girls being tortured and trained at once. I have seen and known numerous girls to go through Charm School, but, understandably, few are reported to have survived or recovered their minds enough to talk about it. Charm School was reportedly operated by an identified member of the Mellon banking family, Bird's endowment for the arts' largest contributor. The operator took the name and role of governor from the movie My Fair Lady, in an attempt to confuse my torturous reality with movie fantasy. In the movie, Governor is the Cockney title given the professor who transformed a female street urchin into a functioning high society lady. Additionally, Mellon's use of the title, Governor, was intended to create scramble for the real governor who frequented the school as though it were only a whorehouse. I am referring to then Governor of Pennsylvania, and later U.S. Attorney General, now Secretary for the United Nations, Dick Thornburgh. One Aquino provided some of the programming at Charm School, and everyone I knew in government operations was at least aware of it. Then Youngstown Sheriff, now U.S. Representative Jim Trafficant, was usually present. He capitalized on his ability to portray himself as Lurch by slowly opening the door and saying, "Walk this way," to a literal slave in training. This means walk like he is walking, like Lurch, Igor, a street whore, Scarecrow, and so on. Once the door closed behind me, Charm School meant I would be charmed, mesmerized, hypnotized, and programmed to be a high-class prostitute for select politicians. I did learn their way to walk. I learned when to talk, how to dress, how to sit, stand, and all the rest. Table manners were not taught, as they were not needed, since slaves endured food and water deprivation when working. Above all, we were taught how to gratify any sexual perversion. Just as Trafficant opened the door to Charm School for slaves, he oftentimes was the one to test their newly learned sexual skills to determine when or if slaves could leave. A typical 3-day course at Charm School included the usual factors of sleep, food, and water deprivation, trauma, high voltage, and programming. Oftentimes experimental or tried and proven CIA-manufactured designer drugs were administered, which produced specific brainwave activity to maximize and slash or compartmentalize programs. I usually spent the first day hanging in the dungeon. Charm School is housed in an identified stone historical railroad baron's former residence, and the basement was in fact a wine cellar dungeon. It was dark, damp, and musty, and was decorated in classic torture chamber fashion. It was complete with various hanging chains, a stretching rack, whips, and altars, including one specially designed for bestiality sex. As I hung by my wrists, I could hear and smell the animals in the next cells: a black Nubian goat called Satan, a small donkey named Nestor, sometimes a small white pony referred to as Trigger, and various dogs, cats, snakes, and others. All Charm School animals were trained to sexually respond to the smell of urine. When someone, such as Dick Thornburgh, who particularly enjoyed this kind of kink, entered my cell and urinated on me, I knew I would soon be released from my chains and led to the animal altar for bestiality lessons, pornography, or to please a perverse onlooker. I was hung by my ankles, stretched on a rack, burned, and tortured repeatedly. My feet and hands were chained to a wall for what was termed off-the-wall sex. I was taught silence announce fashion since screaming did not produce results anyway unless they wanted it for pornography. This was implemented with an electronic canine bark collar normally used to train a dog not to bark. I was repeatedly filmed pornographically, and always taken upstairs to the master's chambers for prostitution to participants, including the real governor of Charm School, then Pennsylvania Governor Dick Dumber, Congressman Jim Traffic and Comet Lieutenant Colonel Michael Aquino, and others. When Kelly was with me, she endured the same and we were forced to see each other physically tortured as further psychological trauma. This was to ensure I could never remember the who, what, when, or where of our bizarre enslavement. This is what is sometimes referred to as cross-programming. In spite of the deliberately created amnesic blocks, I developed a subconscious sympathetic understanding for other Charm School slaves that extended outside the walls of this man-made hell. This understanding emanated from the depths of my being, creating a compassion for other mind control victims that compels me to give voice to their silent pleas for help to this day. I became close friends with one such victim, who must remain anonymous in order to survive to eventually recover. This beautiful blonde and I had numerous opportunities to be together throughout the years, as Houston's government-sponsored travels routinely took him into her home state of Pennsylvania while Dick Dumber was governor. My friend and I were photographed together for Larry Flint's commercial pornography publications, and featured in the illicit films that contributed to funding CIA covert operations. In addition to this, she and I were able to spend 2 weeks together when her husband/handler traveled to Houston's farm in Tennessee for instructions on handling his new bride. I was maid of honor for my friend's wedding, which was no more a marriage than mine to Houston. As was customary with Project Monarch slaves, her marriage to her handler equated to marriage to her mind control owner, U.S. Senator Arlen Specter. The wedding I was forced to participate in was for pornography purposes only, and it took place in Arlen Specter's Connaught Lake House in Pennsylvania. Specter's stone house was located in a wooded, remote setting and was masculine in decor. Side rooms were either designated for perverse sex or were furnished with antiquated NASA virtual reality and programming equipment. The musty smell of Specter's playhouse was overpowered by the scent of roses, which he symbolically presented to his slave on their wedding day. My friend's wedding photos included Catholic themes, and the crucifix featured was rose-cut crystal similar to the one I received from Bird. Regardless of how this girl was depicted, her innate morality was apparent to me. She and I were referred to as minor/meerkats, due to the similarity of our victimizations. Like me, she was controlled through manipulation of her religious beliefs and maternal instincts. The delicate rose tattooed on her left wrist signifying her role in government operations did not detract from her high-class projection any more than Specter's immorality could mar her innate goodness. Once Alan Specter officially became this slave's owner, her Charm School status rose to presidential model. In addition to Charm School, I endured extensive programming to prepare me for future operations. Houston was often booked into Oklahoma fairs, Masonic lodges, FOP conventions, and so on, in order that I be back in the vicinity of Tinker Air Force Base for further programming. My Tinkerbell conditioning further enhanced my photographic memory through direct control for receiving and delivering government messages, which amounted to a computerized compartmentalization of my brain, so to speak. I was also trained in covert criminal operations, such as international drug mule transactions for funding the Pentagon's and CIA's black ops budgets. Houston's CIA-orchestrated travels in the country music industry led me to a top-secret military/NASA installation at a FIT Air Force base in Nebraska. The "you can run, but you can't hide" three conditioning was deeply ingrained in my mind through a technique that was later used on Kelly, as well as on other mind control slaves, I was taken underground to a so-called secret circular room where the walls were covered with numerous screens showing satellite pictures from around the world. These satellites are referred to as the eye in the sky. An Air Force official explained to me that my every move could be monitored via satellite on a separate four-screen viewer. He demonstrated what in retrospect was a contrived pre-recorded slideshow, with the scenes changing as rapidly as he spoke and typed it into the computer. "Where will you run?" he asked me. "To the Arctic?" "The Antarctic?" "Brazil?" "The mountains?" "The desert?" "The prairies?" "The hills of Afghanistan?" "The city of Kabul?" "Devil's Tower, Wyoming?" "Would you try to run to Cuba and live among our enemies? We can find you there. There is truly no place to run and no place to hide." The U.S. Senate, the picture was a bird? The White House? Or to your own backyard? My father was depicted waving from his front door, cupping his hands over his mouth saying, "Come back, just like Aunt Em in The Wizard of Ounce, the moon? We got you covered. You can run, but you can't hide." This had been sufficient to convince me in my suggestible style that my every move could be monitored. During the course of my training/conditioning, I was routinely prostituted to Senator Byrd in Washington, D.C. At the West Virginia State Fair, NASA in Huntsville, Alabama, and at the Opryland Hotel in Nashville, Tennessee. One such night when I was to be prostituted to Byrd at Opryland Hotel, Lieutenant Colonel Aquino was scheduled to join him in perversely assaulting me. Much to my horror, Aquino arrived early, in full army dress uniform, backstage at the Grand Ole Opry. When I saw Aquino talking with the Vatican-based Project Monarch slave runner, Chris Christopherson, for whom I had known since 1979, my personality programmed for Opry events short-circuited. Under circumstances such as this, a multiple without programming would have switched personalities autogenically, whereas I could only switch upon command. I backed away, dazed, right into a soft drink machine. Christopherson saw me as I backed further between the wall and the machine. "What are you doing in there, little lady?" Christopherson asked. "The colonel wants to see you." Aquino had walked over and sarcastically asked, "What are you doing in those machine wires? That could very well be a shocking experience for you." All experiences with Aquino or Christopherson resulted in high-voltage electric shock torture, and apparently neither had any regard for human life. 5. Aquino used the opportunity to reinforce his belief that I had nowhere to run, nowhere to hide, from his power, his stun gun. While I untangled myself from the wires, Christopherson and Aquino continued their banter at my expense. Christopherson held up his keyring and gingled it, catching my undivided attention as conditioned, while he told Aquino, "You're gonna need the keys to the kingdom to work with this one right here." Keys to the kingdom, of course, referred to my previously instilled enter/enter interdimensional Catholic programmed personalities. Since Aquino was my primary mind control programmer at the time, Christopherson was informing Aquino of programs previously instilled in childhood via the right to remain silent. By jingling the keys, he was demonstrating his control over me and his momentary edge on Aquino. "I got him," Christopherson was saying as he jingled the keys. "She's mine unless you wanna play ball. Besides, you have to. The bird sent me." "I've been expecting you," Aquino said with a smile. Events later that night proved that Aquino had been supplied the keys to my previously established Jesuit-based programming, which he and Byrd used and altered to suit their own perversions. Byrd monitored all of my programming, progress, and often tortured me with his whip and pocket knife. He picked up where my mother left off, to destroy any self-esteem I might have inadvertently developed. He said, "There is no place for you to turn because if you could think to talk, no one would ever believe I would have anything to do with the likes of you." He often threatened me that I was considered disposable because, after all, the first presidential model, Marilyn Monroe, was killed right in front of the public eye and no one knew what happened. Bird's threats and cruelty were unnecessary as I could no longer think to seek help anyway, but he loved to hear himself talk and would often drone on and in his infamous long-winded recitations, while I was photographically recording every word he said. He detailed the inner operational structure of the world domination effort, including psychological warfare strategies, and explained how he had and would utilize his expert knowledge of the Constitution to manipulate it and the so-called U.S. justice system, and more. His loose lips provided me yet another means of surviving and staying a step ahead of the game, once Kelly and I were rescued from our mind-controlled existence. Senator Byrd revealed his justifications for criminal activity to me as well. He used me as a sounding board even though he knew I was incapable of input or response. He rehearsed in keeping with his motto, "The only way we can fail, is to fail to think of an excuse." Byrd justified mind-control atrocities as a means of thrusting mankind into accelerated evolution, according to the neo-Nazi principles to which he adhered. He justified manipulating mankind's religion to bring about the prophesied biblical world peace, through the only means available, total mind control in the New World Order. After all, he proclaimed, even the Pope and Mormon prophet know this is the only way to peace and they cooperate fully with the project. Byrd also justified my victimization by saying, "You lost your mind anyway, and at least you have destiny and purpose now that it's mine." Our country's involvement in drug distribution, pornography, and white slavery was justified, as a means of gaining control of all illegal activities worldwide, to fund black budget covert activity that would bring about world peace through world dominance and total control. He adhered to the belief that 95% of the world's people want to be led by the 5%, and claimed this can be proven because the 95% do not want to know what really goes on in government. Byrd believed that in order for this world to survive, mankind must take a giant step in evolution through creating a superior race. To create this superior race, Byrd believed in the Nazi and KKK principles of annihilation of underprivileged races and cultures through genocide, to alter genetics and breed the more gifted the blondes of this world. As Byrd's captive audience, literally, I absorbed information that the other so-called masterminds behind the New World Order would never have revealed for security reasons. But Byrd regarded me as his object, a game piece that he could strategically move through life as though he were playing a chess game. He perceived me as totally under his control with no possibility of my ever being rescued, surviving, and recovering my mind and memory. Byrd likely would have talked to a post, and I filled the role as his silent sounding board. My CIA operative mind control handler, Alex Houston, was often scheduled to perform at the Swiss Villa Amphitheater in Lamp, Missouri, which is yet another installation where I was programmed. Swiss Villa was a cover for a CIA near-death trauma center of which there are several across the country. It is a remote, high-security resort, enclosed with military barbed wire fences, that swings its guarded gate open to the local public for country music concerts. The small amphitheater covers the covert activities occurring inside, which includes U.S. government CIA cocaine and heroin distribution operations and mind control projects. Swiss Villa, like the Mount Shasta, California compound, was also used as a training and operations camp for the shadow government's paramilitary projects referred to by Senator Tnui D. High. I learned that this not-so-secret military buildup, sanctioned by corrupt members of our government, consisted of special forces-trained robotic soldiers, numerous black unmarked helicopters, and the highest technological advancements in top-secret weaponry and Star Wars electromagnetic mind control equipment. These paramilitary compounds were intended for global policing of the New World Order through the multi-jurisdictional police force. A most dangerous game, was often played at Swiss Villa and involved CIA agents, politicians, and others who would attend the resort just for the sport of hunting humans. Kelly and I both were hunted at Swiss Villa. The tortures and rape after being caught were extensive and sufficiently traumatized our minds for ensuing programming, as well as for creating memory compartmentalization for the high-level operations we witnessed behind the villa's patrolled fences. It was at Swiss Villa that I was taught, the most dangerous game, was one where a slave tried to escape and reveal what he or she had learned. If the hunters could not catch and stop the slave, then the black helicopters patrolling the area would. And if all else failed, the eye in the sky would locate him or her, and a torturous death was supposedly imminent. According to my abusers, my deprogrammer and primary advocate Mark Phillips and I have embarked on the most dangerous game, through efforts such as releasing this book and turning a spotlight on the shadow government to reveal its members' identities and their crimes against humanity. Mark Phillips and I are determined to beat them at their own game by arming the 95% with the truth that perpetrators don't want them to know. 1. Dick Tombera is listed in Houston's CIA memo book, which is now in my, and others, possession. 2. Please note that, while still sheriff of Youngstown, Ohio, Trafficant was investigated and subsequently indicted for federal racketeering, drug distribution, and mafia connections. However, he was acquitted through careful CIA jury manipulation and he went on to become the U.S. representative he is to this date. 3. Once gaining eyes to see and ears to hear, this, you can run, but you can't hide, theme is so widely used it is visible from Hallmark greeting cards to interstate overpasses to the lock-in song by the rock group, Police's, I'll Be Watching You. 4. A good friend of mine who remains a victim to date was married to Christopherson on the night she wed her mind control handler, much the way I had married Bird when I wed Houston. The crucifix used to her Larry Flint, wedding night, porn photos was mirrored rather than crystal. 5. Christopherson nearly strangled me to death with his penis, which had further sexually excited him, late in the summer of 1987 during another incident related to Bird.